Let's apply the scientific method. Perform an experiment.
Using science, of course.
Just good science.
That's where all the interesting stuff is.
Telescopic Tuesdays.
Get help. Call somebody.
Looking deeper into the world of science.
A scientist. Call a scientist.
With Dan Riskin.
Good morning, Dan Riskin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. I don't know whether I'll employ this, but I read that AI can make you funnier in your writing, especially in English.
Yeah, you know, I will skip to the sort of take home on this. It is that if you are already a funny person, AI so far is not really going to up your game very much. But if you're somebody who struggles with humor, especially somebody who speaks English as a second language and has a hard time with tone or with sarcasm or whatever it is, AI can be helpful. And so the way they did this study was to, there's something called the New Yorker Caption Contest, where the New Yorker makes a little comic and
right.
There's a contest to see who can make the funniest punchline to go with it.
Sure.
And they gave this to a bunch of people, and people had the option to either they didn't get the choice. The researchers assigned them 10 comics where they just had to come up with the funniest line they could, and then 10 comics where AI came up with some suggested words for the punchline. It didn't come up with a line for you, but it threw some words out that might work. So, for example, there's a New Yorker where the two baseball players are talking back at the home plate. One of them's holding a bat, and then out at the pitcher's mound, the relief pitcher is coming on, but it's the Grim Reaper with the black robe. And so who knows what line is funny for that, but there's lots of good stuff. And one of the suggested lines from AI is statistics. And that does push things in a direction that you might not have thought of when you're trying to come up with a good caption to go with that. And so they did this a bunch of times. And what they found is that overall, if you have a little AI help, you don't have to use the words they offer. It's just that you see them and it takes maybe your brain in a different direction. So it's whether you saw those words or not, not whether you use them, but just seeing the words improves the funniness overall by about 5%. But the important piece, speaking to exactly what you started with, is that this improvement was not significant for people who spoke English as a first language, and it was significant for people who had learned English as a second language and didn't speak it in their everyday lives. And so this shows that AI can help you if that's just not where your strength is.
Okay, what that suggests to me is that the AI is suggesting, hey, it's a baseball thing, maybe you could come up with a statistics joke. All right, I might come up with, he's got a 100% Reaper rate or something like that,
nice.
Which is not that great. But the real funny person is still going to come up with the funnier line.
That's right. And so they compared the scores. So they had independent people look at the captions that people made. And for every comic, there were some people that got a caption, that made up a caption without AI, and some people that made it with AI. And it was 5% funnier with AI, but it was 20% funnier when you look in the New Yorker at what the winning caption was. So, you know, the funniest person is still not beaten by AI. And I think the funny caption for that one, it was something like, well, there are closers, and then there are closers. And yeah.
See?
It's a great line.
Yeah.
And that's much funnier than AI came up with.
Well, there you go. Hey, apparently, this is really good news for me. Watching sports is good for you.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it some mornings, but other days it does feel like it, and it depends a lot on what happened in the game. But overall, over the course of your entire life, this new Japanese study suggests that watching sports actually is good for you. And the way they really came up with this is they looked at 20,000 people, and they asked all of them, to what extent do you feel fulfilled in your daily life? And this is supposed to be just an index of how happy people are overall. And you could take issue with it or you could accept it. But for this study, that was the big metric. And then they asked people how much they watch sports. Do you go to sports ever? Do you watch sports on TV? And what they found overall, going to sports or TV, the more people take in sports, the more they say that they feel fulfilled in their daily lives. And so that is sort of a nice take home. And they broke it down. They went into some further investigations about why that might be. But overall, if you're somebody that enjoys sports, it's probably making you happier than it is making you sad.
Well, it does really bum some people out, though, sometimes. I don't know if you saw this, Dan, but with the Leafs' first game, a funny thing happened on the Jays broadcast, which I was paying more attention to. I was clicking back and forth. And the game was in San Diego, but there were Jays fans there. But the cameras picked up a guy who was sitting in the stands in San Diego watching the Jays and the Padres, and he was wearing a Maple Leafs jersey. And then he was clearly paying attention on his phone. When it got around to the point where it was, you know, where it was kind of obvious who was going to win, they got him on camera putting a Jays jersey over top of his Leafs jersey.
That's the kind of behavior we expect from Vancouver fans, not Toronto fans. That is a very, very funny. I did not see that. But yeah, I mean, it takes you through the emotional roller coaster. And part of it is that whole dynamic of what everybody around you is doing. And so to wear the wrong jersey to the wrong game, you know, I understand the logic behind that. But in this Japanese study, they one of their follow-up studies was to look at what sport people enjoy and to try to see whether that has any kind of bearing on how much pleasure they get from it. And what they found is for Japanese audiences, where baseball is very popular, baseball gives a lot more happiness than tennis, which is not a very popular sport. And their hypothesis is that it's because you're part of a community of people that are all into it, right? So whether win or lose, you at least have everybody at the office the next day that sort of, you know, shakes their head and says, yeah, that was a tough one, or hey, that was great, or whatever it is, or ooh, I'm nervous about tonight. Whatever it is, you've got that camaraderie. And I think those relationships probably are much more important to your overall happiness than what the actual numerical score was, or whether or not you've won a cup in the last couple decades.
Okay. Well, apparently the Japanese get happy when one fat guy knocks the other fat guy out of her circle.
I've never been to a sumo wrestling match, but I want to go. There are a couple of sports that I don't know if I would try sumo wrestling because I'd get pummeled, but I'd be curious to go to a game, and I've always wanted to try cricket. That's a game that I every time I see it, I think, oh, that's on my bucket list, is to try the game cricket.
I had an Uber driver tell me, well, it's just like baseball. I said, no, it isn't, because I understand baseball. And
and baseball doesn't last. I mean, baseball can feel like it lasts for days, but cricket really does last for days, is how I understand it. You can have a game go for like 3 days.
Yeah, I think they also have a shorter version now. But let's talk about a story. I want your take on it. I did talk about it last week. I did a whole opening rant on my show of, shut off the screens and read a book. But the I think it's the same kind of research that you're looking at here.
Yeah, this is for kids. Reading from a screen is no substitute for a book. They had kids read from paper and read from a screen, and the stories were basically the same, and they swapped them around for different kids. So that was all controlled for. And when they were quizzed afterwards, the kids got the same overall score, whether they saw it on paper or screen. So they for this particular instance of what they were reading, it wasn't more so different that they actually scored differently on the test. But when you measure the brainwaves of kids while they're looking at those screens, you can see clear differences. And those differences tell you something. The way they did this study, they had the kids wearing EEG hats, basically. It's like a toque you pull over your head, and it measures your brain waves. It doesn't tell you what part of the brain is active, but it gives you an overall picture. And when kids are looking at a screen, it's low-frequency waves that dominate. And when they're looking at paper, it's high-frequency waves that dominate. And we know from previous studies that the low-frequency waves, the kind they saw when they were looking at screens, are characteristic of a distracted mind that can't focus. It's having a hard time paying attention to something. And when the kids were looking at paper and they had those high frequency waves, those are indicative of the ability to focus very precisely on one thing and not get distracted. And so the suggestion is that when kids are looking at a screen, even without the pop-ups and the emails and the windows and all the other things we have on our screens, just looking at a screen just makes it a little bit more distracting for those kids. And it's that by definition would be just a little harder to focus.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a push as well for a parent if you've got a kid who's been on screens primarily and try to get them to sit down with a book. But I think if you find the right book, and I had mentioned that there was a point at which Harry Potter did that, once they get engaged, they're engaged.
Yeah, it's about finding that right book and trying lots of books. The other trick we do in our house is that we get physical magazines mailed to the house. So I mentioned the New Yorker caption contest. I find the New Yorker captions a lot of fun, and I also find some good articles in there every once in a while. So we could do an online subscription, but we actually do get the physical magazine. And on purpose, we leave those out where the kids are. And a bored kid picks up whatever's in front of them, and they start with the comics. But every once in a while, I'll catch a kid, reading the beginning of a New Yorker caption or an article. And I think, well, that's starting him down the road. That's great. There's something about physical paper.
Well, how old are they?
The 12-year-old is the one who's really reading the articles. The 9-year-olds aren't really, but they're all reading the comics, which is fun. Because some of them need a little explaining that I'm a little uncomfortable doing. It can be fun.
Okay. Is he also perusing prices for a Manhattan condo then? Or?
Not to my knowledge. He doesn't blink when he sees prices because he's not the one who pays.
Yeah, he still hasn't figured that out yet. But he picks up the New Yorker and he's learning to be a little more elitist. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. He's being a good. I'm trying to raise a good snob. But he's very funny. It's fun to get the kids to try to come up with captions for those cartoon contests as well. And when they're funny, it's great to laugh with the kids too.
Always great to talk to you, Dan Riskin. Thanks very much.
Yeah, take care.